for one thing, leaders that are operating with a lean mindset operate with high levels of humility and curiosity. And so instead of thinking they know, you know, they are students and they're looking at life through a fresh lens all the time and willing to learn from others and willing to admit they don't know everything. And so that's one thing. The other thing is pure, unbridled love of people. You know, there are so many leaders that we've met over the years that, you know, that's not what they lead with, a love of people. And you really have to want to develop people. You have to believe that it's your job as an organization, not only to, you know, provide value to customers, but to do so because you're developing your people.
Welcome to the Transformative Leader Podcast, where we talk about what's holding you back from being and showing up as the transformative leader that you already are. This is Amir Ganat, your host and the author of The Transformative Leader. My mission is to put people in touch with their greatness so they fulfill their unique purpose in the world. On this podcast, we do that by giving you an abundance of actionable insight that you can put to good use immediately in your personal and professional life. I'm committed that every episode will leave you compelled to boldly declare, courageously pursue, and abundantly achieve the extraordinary. My guest in this episode is Karen Martin. She's the president of the global consulting firm TKMG Inc. She is a leading authority on business performance improvement, problem solving, and lean management systems. Her clients have included Fortune 500 companies in nearly every industry and government agency at local, state, and federal levels. Karen is also the multiple award-winning author of Clarity First and four other books, and she is a highly rated speaker. Now, Karen and I have spoken at several events together, and I've been an admirer of her work. And in this episode, we're going to talk about what it takes to achieve clarity. We're going to talk about Karen's book, Clarity First, and dig into a few of these components that she has in this book. She's going to talk to us about practical ways in which leaders can create clarity within the organization. Karen, it is really fantastic to have you on the show. Thanks for being here.
Thank you so much, Amir, for having me. It's great to talk with you.
I have been an admirer of your work for many years. Now, you and I have sort of hung out in similar circles. We've spoken at Shingo Institute events and things like that. The books that you've written, many of which have won awards, have always been kind of a staple, if you will, in those circles. The work that you're doing with Lean and business improvement, and I'm so glad to have you here with us to dig into some of your work, at least as it relates to leadership and creating clarity. I know I want to talk to you about your book, Clarity First, and many other things. So before we jump into it, though, I'd love to hear a bit of your story. If you could just share your story of how did you end up getting to this point in your career doing the work that you're doing right now?
Well, at the time everything was happening, none of it made sense. I made so many different jigs and jags in my career that it didn't make any sense. But in retrospect, it all makes total sense. So I started out as a clinical lab scientist. My undergrad degree is microbiology. I'm very far away from that now, but super interested now in COVID. Again, it's kind of rekindling my microbiology love of microbiology. And I just decided that I wanted to go into corporate and get into the business side of healthcare. I was in healthcare for quite a few years on the clinical side. And then I just was intrigued with the business. And so I, kind of worked my way through different companies, different HMOs, insurance companies, then into hospital, business management for a bit and all of those things. And then at that point, I was practicing TQM, W. Edwards Deming's, the father of TQM, Total Quality Management Movement. And then I moved to San Diego in 2000 and happened to hear about lean manufacturing, it was called then, lean manufacturing. and started studying it, and then actually started overseeing the Lean Manufacturing Program at San Diego State University as the interim director of their, what was called the Institute for Quality and Productivity. And I was in awe of the principles from the moment I heard about them. And I started from the moment I heard about them saying, well, that's manufacturing, that's a widget, but we could do it here, and that we can do it here, we can do it there. And the principles are the same. And so that began the, you know, that was the beginning of my lean journey in 2000. And boy, I mean, I just keep learning more every day. There's just no end to learning about what lean is really about.
Yeah, no, it's really fascinating. And I, you know, I understand what you're talking about when you kind of refer to it as lean manufacturing, which is what it was called back then. But you and I both know that now a lot of industries have taken on lean methodologies and applying those principles. But for somebody who hasn't really heard much about lean or doesn't really have a lot of background, are there a couple of myths that you could sort of dispel for us? Because lean, I mean, somebody says lean and it already comes to mind that, oh, you're going to make the organization leaner. You're going to get rid of people and things like that. I'm just kind of throwing out some of the things that I've heard. So as a lean expert, if you will, what is lean all about?
Well, so you are right. That is such a myth. However, it's not actually a myth because in fact, many companies have abused what lean management systems are all about. And they have in fact used it, you know, to lay off people. And that's not at all what it's intended, the, you know, antithesis of what lean management is intended to do. And it's really unfortunate when you see that and you know people that were a victim of that. And, you know, it's kind of hard to have a good taste in your mouth about lean when you've been through that kind of an outcome. Another myth is that it's all about process design. And certainly process is vitally important in any operation, vitally. And it's, you know, stunning how poorly designed processes are still, you know, decades and decades and decades after we've learned that process matters. But it's not, it's just so much more than process design. That's one element. It's really much more about developing people and building, I call it an army of problem solvers that are very, very good at solving organizational problems, because they've practiced the skills and they've adopted the mindsets and behaviors of a really good problem solver. And so there's that part of it. And then there's the whole leadership and culture piece of it that, you know, it got short shrift in the early days of lean, but thankfully is now kind of front and center in organizations understanding what they need to do to kind of become, quote unquote, become lean. You know, if you start practicing the right way, it's pretty broad. The system.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the culture element of lean is so important, because I always say, you know, you can have all the right mind, the right tool sets and skill sets, but if you don't have the right mindset, then it really doesn't work. You get pennies on the dollar on the work that you do. So let's talk about leadership in a kind of a environment that is practicing lean. I want to zero in a bit on leadership, because I know you've worked with a ton of organizations. You do some great work, really causing people to go down that journey of becoming great problem solvers and creating these possibilities and making them happen. So what does leadership look like in an environment like that?
It's such a great question. It looks very different than how leadership looks in most places. So for one thing, leaders that are operating with a lean mindset operate with high levels of humility and curiosity. And so instead of thinking they know, you know, they are students and they're looking at life through a fresh lens all the time and willing to learn from others and willing to admit they don't know everything. And they don't know everything. I mean, you shouldn't know everything if you're the CEO. That's why you have a team. And so that humility and curiosity, you know, plays out in lots of different ways. And lots of times leaders get to a position where, you know, they've kind of got a little arrogant, and that doesn't fly in a lean. If you really want to build a lean operation, a lean management system, that doesn't fly. So that's one thing. The other thing is pure unbridled love of people. You know, there are so many leaders that we've met over the years that, you know, that's not what they lead with, a love of people. And you really have to want to develop people. You have to believe that it's your job as an organization, not only to, you know, provide value to customers, but to do so because you're developing your people. And it's not developing them, you know, just to give them cognitive skills. It's developing them to think differently and feel differently and be different and become the best versions of themselves at all levels. And so a leader does that. A lean leader is also hyper intensely interested in numbers and not just financials. In fact, financials are the outcome of all other numbers, you know, and so most leaders are really not as metrics oriented as you would think. And getting them to, you know, become kind of rabid about the numbers is one of our goals. And I could go on. Yeah. That's a short list.
No, I love it. It's such a great combination. And I know you can, you know, talk about many different facets of it, but just the pieces that you brought up, I think is so important. You know, I've noticed an evolution, if you will, from many years ago. And I remember in 2011, I spoke at an event. It was a manufacturing excellence, operational excellence type of event. And there were 33 speakers, I want to say 30 some odd speakers. And it was only me and one other guy who was talking. We were talking about culture. And our topic was just so popular with everybody. And, you know, I'm sure it had a lot to do with my charisma and my, but you know what? Because people were hungry for that. But nowadays, I'm really encouraged that people have actually picked up that the second point that you brought up around the love of people, wanting to really develop the people and the culture. So important. And it used to not be necessarily prevalent, but I think it's becoming more so now.
Yeah, I think that it's, you know, what you see happening now in some organizations. We have a client right now we're working with. It's dreamy. I know that's an odd word to use in a business context, but it is dreamy because it's a small leadership team. 100% of them are very engaged and very passionate about making this transition to a lean operation, a lean organization. And they're very interested in all the psychology that goes along with, you know, better designed processes and work environments and things like that. So it's night and day working when you've got the full leadership team very passionate about the transformation and the journey.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I want to talk to you about your book, Clarity First. And I know you've written several books, and this one I wanted to kind of zero in on because, you know, you hit at a very, very central point, and you mentioned in here that ambiguity is the corporate default state, a condition so prevalent that tolerance for ambiguity has become a cliched sort of job requirement. So talk to us about this book. How did it come about, and what's the main message of the book?
Yeah, so it actually was born out of the book right before that. Well, not right before, actually two books before that, The Outstanding Organization. And that book centers on four conditions that need to be present to achieve excellence of any sort. You know, it was focused on business, but I actually studied different groups outside of business and what made for excellence, what conditions were in place to create excellence. And it was clarity, focus, discipline, and engagement. And when that book came out, you know, I got lots of comments and emails and, you know, well wishes from people. And then readers started, you know, dropping reviews on Amazon and things like that. And the clarity chapter was the one that people just were really interested in and very emotional about. And so there was one gentleman that, you know, said that he actually shed a few tears reading that chapter because he realized the degree to which ambiguity was dragging him and his team down and frankly, the whole company down. And, you know, he felt relieved to know what it then was, but sad because it felt, you know, a little bit hopeless to try to get rid of it. And he ended up leaving that company, you know, shortly thereafter. So it was this very emotional reaction to that chapter that I did not anticipate. So then I started thinking about it. And I've always been one interested in the truth and reality. And clarity is, you know, very a cousin to all of that. And so I started thinking, yeah, I'll just write a single subject book. It'll be super easy. The Outstanding Organization has four topics. This will just be one. Well, little did I know how much there is to unpack around the concept of clarity. And so it was a pretty intense book to write and figure out how to package this concept that is so complex.
Yeah, so this is a topic with far-reaching implications, particularly because it's not always clear that we are unclear, is it?
No,
I mean, so sometimes we have this illusion of clarity, but we're not, we may all be clear on different views of like what's going on. Is that something you've seen?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, even when I work with people coaching, you know, they'll say something, and when I parrot back what I think they're saying, they say, no, that's not what I meant, you know, and then we'll talk about that. We'll talk about the actual words they used and how that created ambiguity, and I was wrong. Now, you know, the good news is I'm someone who's always seeking clarity, so I sought clarity and learned I was wrong in my assumptions, but a lot of people don't, and that's part of why I wrote the book, is I wanted to heighten awareness that you should always seek clarity, because you could be dead wrong in what someone says, even if the words they're saying seem very clear. So yeah. It's getting that confirmation is really important for healthy communication and better results.
Yeah, you know, as a leader, I learned a lot of lessons around how unclear I was, and I'm sure there are still plenty of opportunities for me to get better. But some of these milestones that I hit, like people would walk out of a session with me and they were unclear whether I was giving them direction or I was just making a recommendation or just simply giving input, and they weren't clear. So they were trying to guess and I found that they weren't asking me. So is this something you want me to go do or is this something you want me to consider? You know, when it comes to direction setting and things like that. Have you seen something like that?
Yeah, I was working with this one client a couple of years ago, and the CEO at dinner one night said to me, you know, I had no idea how much weight people put on my words. And I said, oh, do tell. You know, I love stories. And he said, well, I was walking through the plant. This happened to be manufacturing. Walking through the plant. And I said, oh, one day it'd be really good if we, you know, da 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 da. And I was just talking out loud and not realizing I needed to filter those words or be more clear about what I was actually saying. Because the next thing I know, 2 weeks later, there was a whole project team that was assembled and they're moving down the path of doing this thing I had no interest in doing that fiscal year or even the next. It's really interesting. Leaders do need to take a moment to think about what people think when they hear the words coming out of a leader's mouth. And you know, the bar is very high on the level of clarity a leader needs to operate with. And so it's a two-way street. It's incumbent upon the recipient to clarify, but it's also incumbent upon the information provider, you know, to be clear to begin with.
Yeah, you know, one time I was given some feedback by my folks because I really sort of a superpower that I have, if you will, is empathy. I can get into people's world, but sometimes that can also work against me because I can see everybody's point of view and I'm not really clear. So at one point, they told me, they said, listen, honestly, when we walk out of a meeting with you, we have no idea like what you're thinking, because yeah, you can see this point, you can see that point, but we're not real clear. So the request I made of them, I said, listen, you know, that's just, you're right. I got it. And I will try to be more clear, but please, before you leave, if you feel that you don't have clarity, ask me. And I'm going to also try and ask a couple of questions to make sure that yes, while I empathize with everybody, here's my opinion. And if I have one, or I may just leave it up to you, but it is a two-way street.
Yeah, that's good. You have the high EQ to know to do that. You know, that's a beautiful thing that you did for your team. You know, it's just, I give my team too permission to say, whoa, 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 hang on, what? And it's important. I mean, you know, we're not perfect at communicating clearly. And so it's a two-way street.
Absolutely. Now, in an organizational sense, Karen, what do you see? What are some practices that you've seen that really contribute to the organization being clear, you know, on a macro level, first of all, and then sort of like, hey, what is the direction? Where are we going? And things like that. So what are some good practices?
Yeah, so I divide up the work into the five P's in the book, which stand for purpose, priorities, process, performance, and problem solving. Let me do that again. Purpose, priorities, process, performance, and problem solving. And so they're all important to have clarity in all those areas. It's very important. But it does start out with a clear purpose, and most organizations think they're really good at clarifying what the purpose of the organization is, which you need to capture the hearts and minds of all the people working there and get them engaged in doing good work. But the most practical part of it is the strategy deployment planning cycle. And employing strategy deployment is one of the most clarifying exercises an organization can do. Definitely not for the faint of heart. Definitely takes a lot of practice, like 2 to 3 years is where you finally start even understanding what it really is. You know, it's a very powerful way of prioritizing what work is going to be done in the course of a time period, often a fiscal year, and getting really good at saying not yet to a large number of really great ideas, just to be able to create the bandwidth to do good work, get things done on time, on budget, and done well. And so of all of them, you know, I think that strategy deployment from an expectation setting perspective is the most important. And then execution, of course, is the follow on from that.
Yeah, and an important distinction you bring up is those priorities or strategies that we're saying no to. Because sometimes if you are not totally clear that we're saying no to these things, somebody somewhere in the organization is working on it. And they're just not going to stop working on it because they think, well, yeah, I know what you said, but surely you want us to work on this as well.
Yeah, you really have to manage the plan. You know, putting it together is one phase, but managing it to make sure that you're able to surface if there's any stealth work going on, you know, these secret projects that people, you know, their pet projects that aren't on the plan, but they're occupying bandwidth, you know, the organization made a collective decision to have this list of priorities. And so when someone goes rogue, you know, it just is a terrible act of disrespect for the process and the people and everything. And so you need to be able to surface that. And there's ways to manage the plan where it's more likely that people will say, hey, Joe's off working on, you know, da, da, da. And that I don't see that on the plan.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So is that something that would come out on kind of the review processes? I'm kind of zeroing in a little bit now saying, okay, so let's just say we got real clear on our purpose and our strategies and we deployed that. Now, from an execution perspective, what are some sort of practical techniques, if you will, that we can use to make sure that we constantly sort of bring ourselves back to that level of clarity and stay on the course?
Well, we recommend that the plan be managed every other week to start. And sometimes with practice, an organization could go to a monthly actual, you know, meeting to meet about the plan. And the meetings have a very specific agenda. At least we believe that the meeting should have a very specific agenda. And it's it's not a whole lot of celebrating. It's some, of course, but it's mostly about getting back on track if you're off track, making sure that you're being pure, you know, to the original list of priorities and that things aren't sneaking in. You know, there are rare things that you have to pivot to, It'd be irresponsible as a business not to, but they should be few and far between. And those meetings help an organization see the propensity toward what I call organizational ADD, attention deficit disorder, you know, and so the meetings are tough. And there's a lot of learning about how the organization as a whole actually functions, you know, how the blood pulses through it, how the lymph fluid pulses through it. You know, it's an organism. And so it's managing the plan is as important as the plan.
Absolutely. Now, another point, another one of your P's is problem solving, right? And I know you have an acronym in the book, CLEAR, right? Clarify, learn, experiment, assess, and roll out. So could you talk about problem solving a bit with us?
Yeah, so I could talk about problem solving for days. I love problem solving, and it's so psychology oriented. You know, there's a lot to it. It's not just learning, you know, some tips and tricks and techniques. So what first I'll mention that I'm a bit of a wordsmith. I really like words and looking at word roots and what words do to energetically and also behaviorally to people. And when I was working on the Outstanding Organization, was the first time I learned that the PDCA cycle, Plan, Do, Check, Act, that's often dubbed the Deming cycle. What Deming was not a fan of that. He was actually a far greater fan of Plan, Do, Study, Adjust. But in both cases, the word plan is such the wrong word. And with all due respect to Walter Shewhart, who's the one who actually dubbed Plan, Do, Study, Adjust. Plan just has an immediate meaning, at least in 2021 and a couple decades before, that you're going to do something. You know, so you're creating a plan to do something. And what it really is about is a deep study and then ending up with a hypothesis of some sort. We believe that if we do this, then this will occur. And then the doing doesn't come until the D, do, you know, when you're running an experiment and then you're reflecting and then you're adjusting and all those things. And so plan is a odd word, which is why I started saying, you know, I've got to come up with some way for people to understand what plan really is. And that's when the clear questions were born, because I thought, well, if I ask questions that and people are, you know, kind of forced to answer them, that will keep them at least away from, you know, going down the cliff into the abyss of ambiguity and leaping to solutions and all the things that happen. So that's basically what was behind the clear questions.
Yeah, yeah. It's really great. I like the distinction that you're making between plan and actually putting something out there that we're going to go experiment with. And it's reminiscent, as you were talking about that, I thought about it earlier in my career as I worked with several senseis that we would bring from Japan. And it was always like one of these events, right? So I'm like a junior employee, and here comes this person who has like all the answers, right? And they're usually communicating through a translator and all of this. And he says something and you're waiting to see what the translator is going to say. And I remember being disappointed, like in my earlier years with these guys. I'm like, wait a minute, I thought this guy had all this wisdom, but I was waiting for him to say, hey, you guys need to go do X, Y, and Z. But it was more about questions and more about, well, you know, here's kind of what I'm thinking. What are you thinking? I'm like, what the heck? This guy's paid a lot of money. Why is he not doing this? But then it was many years later that I thought, wow, you know, that is what true wisdom is all about. It's not necessarily just coming up with a ironclad plan on the front end, right?
Yeah, you know, coaching problem solving has been one of the most transformative career activities that I've taken on. And it's, you know, it's really hard to become a really good coach when you're born a teller, telling people what to do. And it takes a lot of discipline, but boy, is it powerful when you can, you know, turn that around and be really in service of someone learning and developing and asking the right questions at the right times to get the thinking that needs to occur for that person to grow and develop. It's just very powerful, but it does take some practice to switch the juice of knowing for the juice of growing someone.
Oh, I like that.
You know, you have to switch those from knowing to growing someone. And it's an important transition to make.
Very good.
You know, it's a little bit like therapy. You know, you go to therapist and they're like, well, you ask the question, well, what do you think about that? And the therapist goes, well, what do you think?
You know? Like, I'm paying you the big bucks. You tell me.
What do you and why do you think that way? And how do you know? It's a little bit like that.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think that's a really good point. And so I think, you know, this is, I think, another really great point in that sometimes to achieve clarity, we take a shortcut, right? We tell everybody, hey, this is how it's going to be and so on. And there's certainly some times when that is appropriate. But oftentimes, that's not necessarily going to give us clarity, is it? I mean,
no. In fact, it's going to not only not result in clarity, it's also going to disengage. You know, no one likes being told what to do. And so, you know, to the degree, you know, catch ball is, you know, one of those great practices that I learned just through strategy deployment work, but catch ball works in every conversation, every meeting, it works at home with loved ones. It works at work, you know, with colleagues. And that catch ball concept of tossing a ball to someone with an idea or a concept or a question or whatever it might be, and then having them toss the ball back and then listening deeply to what's coming back. And then being fully present to engage in that conversation and become a collaborative partner in the path forward instead of, you know, here, do this. I mean, it takes a lot more time and it takes a lot of patience, but that's the respectful way to be. And we need to do more of it more often. And like you said, there is a time and a place for telling. And there's a time and a place for telling and coaching as well, by the way. You know, when someone simply doesn't know a concept, for example, they've never experienced it, of course you need to move into teacher mode and teach them what it is, or a specific kind of method, you know, you have to do that. But, you know, when they have the wisdom, or when they have the capacity to create, or the capability of creating the wisdom by connecting dots, you know, you're kind of obligated to go that path.
Yeah.
Hard to do.
Yeah, it's hard because we have been conditioned to sort of bring the answer and all this. I remember I took over as the plant manager of a plant where the previous person who was there was very much into kind of telling people what to do. And I have to tell you, for months, I could just tell. People were thinking, who the heck is this guy? He's so incompetent. He never has any answers for anything. And it wasn't like I had the answers and I was just asking questions. I really didn't have the answer. Like, I'm trying to figure things out. So you're the expert. What do you think?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. You just said it. They're the experts. The people that do the work are the experts. And, you know, it's just odd how leaders get into a place of leadership through being superstars, often, not always, but often superstars at doing the work, and how hard it is. You know, there's that book, What Got You Here Won't Get You There, or whatever that book
is. Yeah, What Got You Here Won't Get You There, right?
Yeah, yeah. You know, and it's very true. And it's very hard to break that habit and switch it off, basically, and move into this, you know, coach, mentor, teacher type of person. But they, you know, a leader that's been off the front lines for sometimes decades, you know, can't possibly know the details of the work to tell people how they should be doing the work.
Yeah. So, you know, if we step back and look at the overall context of sort of creating clarity of where we're going and how we're getting there, to me, it seems that it always ought to be really driven by some possibility that we're going for, some extraordinary future that we're after. Mm-hmm. The question that I get, and I have my own answers, but I'm really interested in your answers, is that at a time like this, where we just put 2020 behind us and lots of unexpected things going on and lots of uncertainty in front of us, how do you go about creating that sort of clear vision in the face of all the uncertainty?
Yes. Another excellent question, because a lot of people believe that clarity and certainty are, you know, commingled, attached to each other. And they aren't. You know, uncertainty is reality. We're never going to know when the next terrorist act is going to come. You know, we might have some, there's all these murmurings about 9/11. There was plenty of evidence that something was brewing, but no one, I don't think, knew exactly what was brewing and when. Well, of course, there's all kinds of conspiracy theorists out there and everything about that. But, you know, we really don't know when the market's going to tank. We might get some hints and some warnings and things like that. We don't really know if a competitor is going to go belly up, or worse, they're going to acquire, you know, the one person, the one company that you were able to successfully compete against, and all these things. You never know. But clarity, you know, is more of the details that are knowable that you use in order to execute cleanly in life. And so it's seeking out the knowable information and relaxing into, in some ways, the unknown. That doesn't mean you sit back and just wait for things to happen. Of course, you plan and you have, you know, plan B and contingency plans and all those things. But it's, you can relax into reality and the present state when you have clarity much more easily than you can when you don't. And that, I mean, we have great examples right now of the danger of ambiguity all around COVID and the data and the testing and the now the vaccination rollout. And there's just so much ambiguity that, you know, no wonder people are nervous and in some cases very afraid. And it's no way to be operating, but we are.
Yeah.
We're in the middle of it. So
yeah, this is a very important distinction between clarity and certainty. I honestly had never thought about it that way. And I've always sort of commingled that in my own head. But we all do need to be comfortable with uncertainty, then be real clear about those things that we can plan and we can anticipate and, and at least have a plan for, right?
Yes. So, you know, an example about uncertainty and clarity is that we had a client once in the energy sector that suddenly lost tremendous market share because they hadn't kept up with what wind technology was doing. And they had a paradigm that wind was never going to be anything and it was impossible to make it anything. And so they didn't do anything. And then all of a sudden their competitor snuck up on them. And it was a significant wake up call for them that they had clarity. The facts were available. Everything that was happening in the non-fuel based or fossil fuel based industry was out there for everyone to read, but they just had a paradigm and a level of bravado that it wasn't going to happen or it wasn't going to happen as quickly as it did. And so, that's the difference between certainty and uncertainty. Like you don't know exactly where people are going, but you can see plenty of signs and get as clear as you can about, again, what's knowable.
Yeah. So no, I appreciate your perspective on this. And I know you wrote this book a few years ago, but it really was one that I wanted to do a deep dive in. But I wanted to also ask you, what's been some of your recent work or what are you working on these days that you're excited about?
Wow, I'm so excited about everything. I thought COVID was going to, really affect management consulting in a profound way and coaching in a profound way. And it's been an easier transition than I thought. I still long for being in person with people. I still believe that you see more, you hear more, body language is important and all those things, but it's been much more easy to adapt to, Zoom all day long than I thought it would be. So we launched the TKMG Academy, our online learning arm, April 2nd. So it's right after the shock or in the middle of the shock of COVID. And it's been a great ride. It's something I've been thinking about for a decade and finally decided January of 19 to pull the trigger on and start planning it. So that's been really fun. And it's really interesting how you can think you really have a good handle on a topic and writing these courses, they're about an hour in length, writing these courses, every single course, We're the whole team's like, wow, we didn't put two and two together like that before. And it's just so fun. And, I'm hoping that people that are seasoned in improvement will really, start coming to the table. We have a lot of beginning, improvement people and actually a lot of really seasoned leaders, but the middle section of improvement professionals, we haven't really tapped into that market yet. And I think it's because they think they know everything. And I also know a fair amount. I practice it forever. But every time you go into a topic and you start peeling back the layers of what makes that topic, there's just so much more to learn. And there's so much more, the more experience you have, the more you learn because you're able to connect dots differently. So it's been really fun. That's been something. And then I'm just doing a ton of both value stream work, transformation work, and problem solving coaching, developing problem solvers, which I love. It's one of my favorite things. And then also full transformations where companies are committing to multi-year contracts to start really getting everything from the ground up into what would be a really stellar lean operation.
Yeah, no, that's exciting. All the work that you all are doing. And I know you and I were talking before the interview about the sort of the silver lining, if you will, that 2020 brought as well. And there's no way to minimize the devastation that it has brought to so many businesses and people and things like that. But it, but with it has come some amount of innovation, and I'm seeing the same thing in with my clients. Many of them have sort of adapted to the new situation. They said, look, we're not going to wait for things to get back to quote unquote normal. We're going to go ahead and lean into this. So, you know, I've been extremely busy as well.
Yeah, it's a great paradigm buster to, you know, to be faced with constraints that you never encountered before and have to figure out, you know, like I thought, you know, doing any kind of value stream mapping work on the computer would be just the kiss of death. It's been very powerful and different benefits than being in person. So it's been fun.
Yeah. Yeah. Fantastic. Well, Karen, thank you so much for your time and the nuggets that you've shared here. There's so much more in your books, and I could go on talking with you for hours, but we're going to put your links in the podcast notes. But could you tell our listeners how we can get a hold of you, find out more about the work that you all are doing and engage you and that sort of thing?
Sure. Websites are tkmg.com. We used to be the Karen Martin Group, but now we're an actual firm. So tkmg.com and then tkmgacademy.com are the two websites. And then LinkedIn, I'm Karen Martin OpEx. Yeah, I'm Karen Martin OpEx, tkmg-academy on LinkedIn, Twitter, Karen Martin OpEx. They're all the website.
Yeah. We'll make sure that we put those. But if they go to tkmg.com or tkmgacademy.com, then this should bring them to you.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Well, great. Thank you so much again for your time and your wisdom. I really appreciate it.
Amir, so good to see you again after all these years. Thank you for the great conversation.
My pleasure. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Transformative Leader Podcast with Amir Gannad. If you haven't already, don't forget to subscribe to the show so that you never miss an episode. And if you enjoyed this episode, we'd love to hear from you. Leave a comment, rating, or review wherever you listen to podcasts. And be sure to share the show with others who would benefit from our content. Don't forget to visit our website at thegannadgroup.com to learn more about the ways in which we guide leaders in creating extraordinary cultures that deliver breakthrough results and unprecedented fulfillment. While you're there, you can download our free ebook and audio series on making your culture transformation stick at thegannadgroup.com/culture-ebook. As always, feel free to drop me a line at amir@thegannadgroup.com and connect with me on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter. Until next time, may you boldly declare, courageously pursue, and abundantly achieve the extraordinary.